Hello and welcome to Sustainable Warwickshire, a podcast talking about all things related to climate change and sustainability across the county of Warwickshire.
Hello, I'm Steve Smith, the Director at Warwickshire County Council, and I'm your host of our podcast series, Sustainable Warwickshire. We hope to share some of the things being done to fight climate change and support biodiversity from across the county and give you some ideas on what you can do to play your part. In this episode, we're going to talk about our children and young people. This is the group who will be the most affected by climate change, even though they bear little or no responsibility for it. Joining me to discuss how we can make sure the children in Warwickshire can feel empowered and supported to get involved with the environment, I have three guests. Christy Namo, Director and Project Manager at Achieving Results in Communities, a community interest company, and two members of the team from Michael Drayton Junior School in Nuneaton, Diane Compton-Belcher, who's head teacher, and Sarah Gittins, Year 3 teacher and the Science and Outdoor Education Lead. Christy, if I can come to you first, lovely to hear from you. Explain your role and what you do at your company.
Yes, thank you, Steve. I work for Achieving Results in Communities, or ARC, and we deliver projects here in Warwick District around getting people out into nature, getting people outdoors for the benefit of their mental and physical health and well-being. And specifically, we've been working on a number of projects with children and young people. One of those has been the very exciting Children's Forest, a sort of a new tree planting project just outside the village of Radford Semele, where we've been working with three schools and a number of different community organisations to plant and care for a new woodland, a new forest.
Thank you. And Diane, if I can come to you, it'd be great to hear the breadth of what you do at Michael Drayton School.
Yeah, so if we think of outdoor, what we offer for our pupils outdoors, if we think of it as an umbrella, we have a universal offer for every child who comes to our school. And that's with them accessing our reading retreat, which is a recycled container, which they can use at break times, lunch times, maybe within lesson times. We also have an outdoor theatre in the round that the pupils use and a stage area. We have grow zones. So each class has a responsibility of an allotment just based outside their classroom where they'll grow things, crop them, cook with them, and they're purposeful opportunities within the curriculum. We then offer a range of support generally for our social, emotional, mental health needs. Pupils will be put into different groups depending on need. We're a Thrive school, so we use the Thrive approach, which is an approach that develops resilience and supports plugging of developmental gaps, growing articulate and confident pupils. So we may well use the outdoors to support those Thrive activities. We have Garden Enterprise, which the children will grow plants within our polytunnel. They'll make different things throughout the year. We're committed to reducing the use of single-use plastic across the school. We have walking buses, which they requested. We have recycling bins. We're making eco bricks at the moment, building new furniture for the outdoors. And something that is quite recent but heavily invested in is courageous advocacy. So looking where we can facilitate in our pupils to become explicitly responsible for themselves, others and the environment. Now, within our strategic priorities in our school vision, our school aim statement, we are very much saying we care for our pupils and we want them to grow, to learn the world around them. So they then care for the environment and will take care of it.
So certainly a lot, and we'll explore some of those more closely in a moment. So if I could bring you in to introduce yourself, and particular to pick up on that point about science that Diane mentioned and the link to the curriculum, it'd be good to hear from you to explain how that resonates so much with your pupils.
Okay, so I'm in charge of science. I lead science, but I've also started leading outdoor learning this year because we felt that the two subjects went well together. There's a lot of outdoor learning linked in with science, but it does go across the curriculum because it will fit in quite nicely with geography. So my job is to look at the curriculum, see how much outdoor learning we can incorporate into it, and make sure that we're making good use of our grounds. We're a lucky school, really, because we have fabulous grounds. We're on the edge of a woodland, so we have lots of opportunities to get outside, to study in the grounds, but also to go to the woodland as well and use that. I've also run a wildlife club after school, so I asked Diane if I could have some wildlife cameras. And we bought a hedgehog house because we wanted to find out what wildlife we've got in our school grounds and encourage the children to make homes for it, to respect it. With our curriculum, we want to make sure that we're ready for the changes that are coming to the science curriculum, which is all to do with climate change and incorporating that in. So we've gone with a David Attenborough quote, which is that no one will protect what they don't care about and no one will care about what they've never experienced. So our aim now with our outdoor learning is to get those children experiencing the outdoors and respecting nature and understanding that we can do things to change the way the world is going. And we want to give them that love of the outdoors as to enhance our curriculum, but also for their own mental well-being.
I couldn't agree more. Christy, if I just come back to you, and obviously in creating the community forest that you talked about, are you finding that the subject of particularly of biodiversity and what we can enjoy in this country, and Sarah mentioned David Attenborough there and the recent series Wild Isles, do you think there's a real connection there between children and young people and the work that you do in your company and the projects that you have?
Yes, absolutely. And it's great to hear that Michael Drayton have got such great outdoor learning facilities. We're in our project, we're specifically working with three schools, two of which don't have a large outdoor provision, and they're in an urban environment, and one which is closer to the children's forest, so they're able to walk to the location. And there's actually a lot of research out there now that says that connection to nature is really important to actually taking nature protecting activities and actions. So there's a whole department at Derby University dedicated to nature connectedness. And this has shown, and research there, has shown that the more we are engaged with nature, connected to nature, the more likely we are to take part in activities that will connect, that will protect nature. So yes, definitely with the children having the opportunity to be outdoors, there are four phases to our project. Before the children really even get to plant trees, they spend a lot of time just spending time in the woods and in the natural environment, experiencing what it is like to be outdoors, learning about the wildlife, the biodiversity of that environment, and imagining what their future forest will look like. So there's a lot of learning that goes into the activities before they actually plant the trees. And after they plant the trees, the really important part, in many people's view, is the tending of those trees and the caretaking of them afterwards. So that's a big aspect of the children's forest.
Excellent. And if I come back to you, Diane, and you covered quite a lot in your, as you described it, the umbrella of activity that you have. And I just wondered, how is that translating the work that you do at the school with the children, how that might translate into behaviour change, particularly and how that might translate back at home, you know, and impacting on the parents and carers of the children. Do you see that? Do you see a change in behaviour, real drive to want to make a difference, yeah, starting with the children?
Yeah, I think we do. So we're also, I mean, we are lucky that we've got Hartzell Hayes nearby, which is a country park, and our pupils go there a lot within the curriculum as well. So we get parents saying that the pupils are asking to revisit, you know, Hartzell Hayes. Maybe they've done some sort of trail, or they've done the den building over there and they're wanting to go back and show parents that kind of thing. When we're growing vegetables or growing flowers and plants, we see that transferred then into the home because they're wanting to do that. And often we might get parents asking us, you know, where can I get that? Or some of the children even saying to us, I want to do this at home, but we don't have that. You know, we'll supply. We're very clear. We're very committed at Michael Drayton that money is never a reason for pupils not to get involved in something, especially when it comes to our environment. So yeah, I do see that the more we promote the outdoors, the more it's transferred into the home with regards to growing and looking after their environment. We see an increase of recycling. We're creating the eco bricks, so we're asking for their plastic bottles at home to be bought in, so we can create those bricks to build furniture. It is a partnership. Parents are very busy, so if we can lead on that partnership, we're more than happy to do so.
Yes, and it's a movement, isn't it, really, for any of us, whether you're a child or an adult, to think about changing the way you live, and therefore you can have a positive impact on seeking to reverse climate change. It strikes us all that climate change can be a somewhat doom and gloom subject in how it can be portrayed. And the phrase eco-anxiety can be prevalent, but if it is seen as a doom and gloom and hopeless situation. I just wondered, Christy, what you think about, you know, what eco-anxiety might mean to children and young people and how it can be reduced, but more so on a positive side, how that might stimulate new solutions and how the younger can feel rather inhibited. And having the freedom and the imagination to think beyond the way us adults might feel constrained. So, but if you could just expand on those two concepts for us.
Yes, certainly. Well, we've talked about how children are concerned and aware of climate change. You know, it's around us everywhere. We can't avoid it. And adults as well. And it is actually now a recognised term, this concept of eco-anxiety, of that feeling that it is quite overwhelming. And so what we try and do, and Michael Drayton are obviously doing it, and other organisations as well, is try and turn that anxiety into positive action, so that we are actually, that's what all these projects are about. We're doing things in the face of what can seem really overwhelming. Every little thing is going to help to reduce that anxiety, talking to people about it as well, talking to others, talking to educators, other children. It's really important that we have these conversations, but also that we are able to have some positive action. So in the case of the children's forest, being able to be out and spend time in nature and plant trees and then come back and care for those trees and tend them is a really important way of tending to ourselves as well as tending for the natural environment. And one of the really exciting things about the children's forest is this concept of future generational thinking. It's about thinking of what we're doing now is going to benefit the children of the future. So not just the human children, but also the children of the natural world. So the trees, the plants, the insects, all of those things are going to benefit. And in the four stages of the children's forest, one of the really important steps is experiencing and imagining. So before the children plant the trees, spending time out in the area that they're going to actually plant those trees and imagining what the future will look like and imagining what that forest will become. And children are in a really great stage at life to be able to do this, to imagine what the future will look like and come up with different ways of seeing things, whereas perhaps we as adults might be a little bit more not closed off completely, but might struggle to have that really open-minded imagination. So that's why it's really exciting working with children and young people on projects like this because they open our eyes to future possibilities.
And so if I come back to you, and you made the very clear link between the subject of science and also the outdoor education benefits. And I just wonder whether you can go into a little more detail about curriculum and how it might develop, if it has developed, and how it might develop further. Because obviously we're hoping to encourage more pupils to come into the science sphere, you know, and work on the solutions of the future.
There will be a change to the science curriculum. I don't know exactly when it's coming. They keep saying there will be more about climate change. So there's just a brief outline of it. But the idea of the new curriculum is that within science particularly, it will be encouraging children to learn about climate change and to want to take responsibility for it. And the hope is that then those children will have that interest, will want to take responsibility, and will look at future careers in that. So when the new science curriculum is eventually released, we want to move on that straight away in Michael Drake and then incorporate it into the way we learn and make sure that we have incorporated all of the outdoor learning, give the children that love of the outdoors. So we've already looked at our curriculum intent, and like Diane says, we've got lots and lots of things going on around school to make the children aware of climate change and how important it is. And I've been with Mike, I have a little year three class who I've been doing an RSPB project. It's called Curriculum for Nature. It's a lovely little course that people can go on and get involved on. And they give you lots of ideas for getting children outdoors. But one of the nicest things is measuring children's interest before and measuring children's interest at the end. So I'm already seeing with my class, they have they're only 7, 8-year-olds, but they already have a greater awareness of what's going on in the world. When we're building on everything, we need green spaces. They're already questioning things like that. My class are quite concerned about how we can protect the nature around us. And so it's been really interesting working on that and seeing them change. And what we want to do with our curriculum now is to make sure that that follows through the school and that all classes, at every opportunity that we can get in, every opportunity within every subject, not just the science, but it will lend itself to PSHE and discussing. We just want to make sure that they are aware. So if they want those future careers, that is available to them. If we can get them now at this age and get that spark, that interest, hopefully we have some future scientists on our hands.
More Brian Cox and more scientists looking at future solutions has got to be a good thing, I agree. And Christy, you talked before about the localised project that you do in Warwick District, just outside Leamington there. Is it possible, is it achievable to have other community interest groups like yourself and companies who can expand this further and wider across Warwickshire and the Midlands? Is there a network?
Well, yes, absolutely. It would be fantastic to see more projects like the Children's Forest or any of the work that we do around well-being in nature, which is the other sort of strand of our work. We work with adults as well as children and young people. The Children's Forest is actually a methodology that's been developed down in Sussex and is already sort of spreading all over the country. Our idea of delivering this project here in Warwick District was really a sort of a pilot to show, and over the last 2 years of doing this, it's already seen to be successful, to show how this can be delivered. And we would love this to be rolled out in other places around the district and the county. As probably everyone's aware, one of the most challenging things with schemes like this or tree planting, I suppose, in general is getting access to land. So it's brilliant if a school has land that could have some not just tree planting, but wildlife areas, other habitat areas. You know, we've talked about wildflower meadows or the importance of ponds as well in supporting different different habitats and different wildlife. So yeah, that certainly would be an aspiration and an aim.
And this does require resources. You pick up on that point about having land to expand these green spaces. And just looking at the point of resources, Diane, I mean, obviously, as a head teacher, you have obviously have a lot to juggle with school budgets and the demands that are placed upon it. And I just wondered what more could other agencies do, like your local councils or perhaps at government level or from any other assistance? Do you see that would, I'm sure that would be welcome. You know, have you got a view on what kind of support might expand this further for you and other schools?
So our alfresco area, the only physical cost, when I say, you know, mini cost, was for some blue rope, which kind of marked the area that were put in posts to section the area off. Everything else was time. We contacted the Hartzell Hayes, and we asked for, you know, the fallen trees, I think that's the right term. So we had, you know, we made them into stumps for seating areas. We contacted local landscape gardeners for like wood chippings and things like that. We reused whiteboards from at classrooms that had new ones put in. So it was all recycled within the area. But the biggest cost, not money, but cost is time. So for any school who, you know, and we are all as schools struggling with our budgets, etc., and, you know, staffing costs and everything else. And you're thinking, I really want this, but I can't afford it. It's not money, it's goodwill and it's time. So for me, how the local council or the government or whatever it be, it's around volunteers. And it's around skilled and not necessarily all skilled, but non-skilled, but hardworking individuals coming together to donate time to put this kind of thing together. You know, we contacted a company who allowed us to use their mini digger for digging out the area to put the stumps in. In fact, we didn't use it. They donated their time and they did it because they could do it faster and they're obviously insured in doing that. So they did that for us. It was volunteers. It's goodwill. Our grow zones outside classrooms, we leave the little spades in them. So when parents come and collect on an afternoon, they want to dig a few weeds out, knock yourself out. You know, if you've got 5 minutes, please do so, help us, because it is this shared partnership, shared commitment in keeping and maintain, like creating and maintaining. But yeah, if I could ask for anything for our areas to be replicated, it's not money, it's people having the capacity to source these things, but also time. And I don't know, a lot of companies are able to give up or volunteer time. They can have community days. It's maybe about promoting that within the local council and directing them to the schools to come and work on these types of projects.
That's really helpful for us to know here at the County Council that's a way we can to help bridge that gap in needing volunteering time from other organisations. So that's something we'll definitely take away from this podcast. And just changing subject slightly, Diane, obviously you obviously move in network circles as a head teacher. Do you see other schools adopting the approach that Michael Drayton have? Do you see it growing?
Yeah, I do. You know, we're very outward facing here and we welcome collaboration. We've been working within our local network, locality of Hartzell, but further afield across Nuneaton and Warwickshire for some time now. And we welcome staff to come and see what we do, for them to observe, you know, some of my learning support team in delivering specific SEMH interventions, those supporting social, emotional, mental health, or even curriculum areas. People are more interested in it because, and I'd say probably more post-COVID, because everybody's seen the impact that COVID had on our children, and that's not going to disappear anytime soon. So people will people see what we do, we make a difference. Every school's making a difference, but they can see the types of interventions and the provision that we're offering here at Michael Drayton. So they want to come and see it. And then they look to see, well, how can we adapt that model back at our school? And it might be on a smaller scale. It might be just taking snippets. It's about taking the bits that they need and putting it back into their own place. And I feel, you know, we have a joint responsibility, not just for children at Michael Drayton, but across the town and further afield across Warwickshire. So where we can help, we will help. Where we can support, we will. I'll talk about it within my local network, in my consortium. But actually, the best thing to do is pick up the phone Michael Drayton and say, can I come and have a look around? Absolutely. Because them coming to have a look around is not going to stop us from delivering our provision. It's just somebody watching us do it. It's absolutely fine by us for that to happen.
And Christy, if I come to you, you talked earlier about wanting to see, you know, a wider network of similar community interest companies doing similar things that ARC are across Warwickshire. And I just wondered, again, in your circles, you know, working with other Carbon Trust, Warwickshire Wildlife Trust and the Forestry Commission, other agencies, are you seeing more of, you know, more green spaces, connection to green spaces and how they connect up and that kind of network? I just wonder whether you can see there's a growing movement for that. Is there something that agencies should be doing more to build on the good work you've been doing around Radford Semele?
Yes, absolutely. And I think Diane has touched upon it as well in terms of the work that schools do collaboratively. Likewise, it doesn't have to be a community interest company, a charity. All sorts of organisations are working in partnership to ensure that that these programmes can happen, you know, all around the country. So any group or any organisation. It's also been touched upon about resources. Obviously, money is a big aspect as well. And for some of our programs, we've been fortunate to get funding from the County Council, but we do a lot of grant writing and fundraising in order to make sure these programs can be delivered to anybody and can be free so that they're accessible to everyone to take part in. I just wanted to pick up on something that Sarah was saying about the sort of mental health benefits as well, because that's a big aspect of our work with the children that we're working with, but also the slightly older children, the sort of secondary age. The benefits of actually having the children out of the classroom environment and in a natural setting is really, really noticeable from teachers, as we've heard, but also from us and from the children themselves. They really are able to engage a lot more in the natural environment. So if they travel to that green space, we have the Foundry Wood here in Leamington Spa that we run a youth mentoring in nature program there with the local secondary schools. And that's done in sort of a lot more sort of one-to-one level, or there's only three or four students at a time who'll come and have a mentoring program with us. And again, that helps to engage that kind of perhaps harder to reach age group.
Thank you, Christy. An important point to raise. So we're coming to the end of our podcast now. We always like to finish our conversations with sharing some ideas on what other people can do to play their part. So I'll ask each of you, what would your top tips be for parents or carers, education professionals or children to get their own children and young people engaged with the environment and climate change? So I'll come to you first, Sarah. Have you got any top tips for our listeners?
Get outdoors more. So just be outside, even if it's just in the garden, but walking is good. Our curriculum uses the 50 things to do before you're 11 and three quarters from the National Trust. That's a brilliant way to just find little things that you can do outdoors. There's all sorts of things, you know, sort of to do with, you can have the seaside, like, you know, look in a rock pool, but also catch a falling leaf. There's lots of tiny little, you know, just little short little activities you can do. It could be just, I think at home as well, looking at your garden, how can you make it a better place for wildlife? So feeding the birds, a little hole in your fence for hedgehogs to get through, for those hedgehog pathways, and even investing in your own little wildlife camera. You can get them quite cheaply, set it up at night, see what's in your garden. The children are really engaged with that. But the biggest thing is just get yourself outside, I think.
Quite right. And we'll certainly find that link to those 50 things to do, and we'll share that on our own website as well. That's a brilliant idea. Diane, I'll come to you next. Obviously, under the umbrella that you've described, there's a huge amount of ideas you've already given to our listeners. Anything else that springs to mind?
For me, it's leading by example. You know, if we want our children to and children and young people to grow to care about their environment and look after their environment, it starts now, doesn't it, in educating them, demonstrating what they can do, show, you know, educating them on the impact if we don't, informed and age related, obviously, but really giving them opportunity. If by leading by example, you know, you're showing them how to do it, you're facilitating them to do it, and also you're given the opportunity to grow, to love the world around them. And, you know, we're committed within our school strategic priorities. That's what we will do within our curriculum statement. It's around the 50 things to do before 11 and three quarters. We live and breathe it. It's not a tagline. You know, you walk in our school, you'll feel that we care for our environment. You'll see it. The conversations you're having with the pupils, it's all there. It's embedded. It wasn't always like that. It's been it's a journey. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It won't be sustainable if you just throw everything at it. So for me, you pick an area that you want to develop first, and you go with it. And it might be a grow zone, it might be animals, it might be the outdoor learning, it might be a specific area you want to develop, like a reading retreat. You pick one, focus on that, get that sorted, and then let it grow. And it will organically grow, and people will get enthused, and you'll bring your staff along with you and your parents as well.
Fabulous. And Christy, finally to you, top tips from your part of the world.
Yeah, well, I would agree with Sarah about getting outdoors in nature more, but particularly getting outdoors with other people. We use the five ways to well-being in a lot of our work, which is about connecting, taking notice, being active, keep learning, and give. Those are the five ways to well-being. So getting outdoors in nature with others is a great way of ticking a lot of those items, particularly around connecting, because you're connecting with each other whilst connecting with nature. And that in turn has that knock-on effect, that benefit I was saying earlier about if we're more connected to nature, then we're more likely to take part in activities that help protect nature.
Thank you. Thank you, Christy, Sarah, and Diane. Thank you for joining me today. And I've learned a huge amount given these quite difficult times economically, and we're all struggling to live within budgets and within our means and give our time. There is so much that is happening. That's the inspirational thing. There are so many things one can do. And I would endorse what you've all said about building from quite modest starts, but and trying to sustain them as well. And the other point really is about how good for our mental health and well-being this all is for both the children and us as adults as well, in our jobs as well as in our own lives. So thank you again. It's been tremendous. So everybody, that's the end of this episode of our Sustainable Warwickshire podcast. If you'd like to find out more about climate change in Warwickshire, visit www.warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk. Here you'll find case studies of other Green Shoots projects that are aimed at children and young people, as well as links to funding opportunities for schools and not-for-profit organisations. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed the conversation and would like to hear more of the same, please do subscribe, and we'll be back next month with more.